The headlines: U.S. Israeli genocide in Gaza continues for the 152nd day, with the death toll surpassing 30,700, mostly women and children. The Hamas resistance movement asserts that any ceasefire agreement must effectively prevent all kinds of Israeli crimes against the Palestinian people. Former U.S. President Donald Trump secures victories across 13 states in Republican primaries on Super Tuesday, further strengthening his position in the race for the White House. Hello and welcome, everybody, to Israel's genocidal war. On the Gaza Strip enters its 152nd day, more civilians fall victim to the regime's airstrikes on the besieged territory over the past 24 hours. An Israeli bombing of Al-Zaytun neighborhood in Gaza City left two Palestinians dead and several more injured. The city has witnessed another attack on the people waiting for aid, resulting in the injury of several of them. In central Gaza, six civilians, including a journalist working for the Al-Aqsa TV, were killed in the attacks on homes in Deir al-Bala. To the south, 25 bodies have been recovered from under the rubble in different areas of the city of Khan Yunis. Meanwhile, the World Food Program reported that the Israeli army denied the entry of an aid convoy to famine-stricken northern Gaza. The death toll from the Israeli onslaught on Gaza since early October has now surpassed 30,700, with a majority of them being women and children. The Organization of Islamic Cooperation has held an extraordinary foreign ministerial meeting in the Saudi city of Jeddah to discuss the Israeli occupation of Palestine. Gaza was the focus of the talks, with a final OIC statement calling for an immediate and unconditional end to the deadly Israeli aggression against the besieged territory.
The OIC calls for an immediate and unconditional ceasefire and cessation of the all-out aggression against the Palestinian people in the Gaza Strip, the provision of unimpeded and adequate humanitarian, medical and relief aid, the provision of water and electricity, and the opening of humanitarian corridors to deliver urgent aid to the Gaza Strip.
The statement from the 57-member bloc also warned about the dangerous consequences of continuing Israeli genocide and ethnic cleansing of Palestinians in Gaza. It called on the UN Security Council to take urgent measures to stop Israeli atrocities in Gaza as well as the rest of the occupied Palestinian territories. The OIC categorically rejected any attempt to forcibly transfer the Palestinian people from their ancestral land. It said that peace can only be achieved when the Israeli occupation comes to an end.
The OIC affirms that peace, security, and stability in the region can only be achieved by ending the Israeli colonial occupation and all its illegal policies and criminal practices against the Palestinian people, and calls on all countries and international institutions to take practical steps that lead to empowering the Palestinian people with their inalienable rights, specifically their right to self-determination, independence, and return on the basis of international law and international legitimacy resolutions, and to confront all steps that undermine these rights.
The OIC also deplored some countries for claiming to be the defenders of human rights, while at the same time supporting the ongoing aggression against Palestinians and granting impunity to the Israeli regime. The organization did not single out a country, but the U.S. is known for its strong political and military support to the Israeli regime since it launched a genocidal war on Gaza back in October. Tuesday's foreign ministerial meeting of the OIC was held at the request of Iran and several other members. The United States is piling up pressure on the Palestinian resistance movement, Hamas, to accept a temporary ceasefire with Israel. This is yet another attempt by Washington to back the regime after providing it with weapons and money to launch this genocidal war on the Gaza Strip.
The hostage deal is in the hands of Hamas right now. Okay. Because there's been an offer, a rational offer. The Israelis have agreed to it and waiting to see what the Hamas does.
Biden also claimed that the Tel Aviv regime has presented a rational offer on the establishment of a ceasefire. He also talked about Israeli captives held in Gaza, but failed to mention thousands of Palestinians languishing in the regime's jails for months and years without trial or charges. The U.S. president made the remarks as Egyptian and Qatari mediators are trying to find ways to hammer out a deal before the holy month of Ramadan. The United States has already vetoed three UN resolutions on the Gaza ceasefire and supplied Tel Aviv with military and financial support for the Gaza war. Meanwhile, Hamas underlined that the security of Palestinians will not be ensured unless a permanent ceasefire takes hold.
In the past 2 days, Hamas presented its position on the proposal by Qatari and Egyptian mediators at the end of last week. We reaffirmed our conditions for a ceasefire, a full pullout from the Gaza Strip, the return of the displaced to the areas they left, providing adequate relief and medical aid, and launching the reconstruction process.
Israel is reportedly against the withdrawal of its forces and the return of Palestinian refugees to the northern part of the Gaza Strip. In December, fighting was paused and humanitarian aid was allowed into Gaza as part of a weeks-long ceasefire. It also saw an exchange of 240 Palestinian abductees with 105 Israeli captives. Hamas has said time and again that any prisoner exchange deal is out of question unless its conditions for a ceasefire are met. Moving on, the Islamic Resistance in Iraq says it has launched a new attack against Israeli targets in the occupied territories in support of the Palestinian people in Gaza. The Iraqi resistance says that it targeted the power station at Israel's Haifa airport using drones. It added the operation was carried out in response to Israel's massacre of Palestinian civilians, including women and children, in Gaza. The Islamic Resistance in Iraq has carried out a number of attacks on Israeli targets in recent months. Last week, the group launched a drone attack on a chemical facility in the Israeli port of Haifa. The resistance group has also struck major American military bases in Syria and Iraq amid anger over the U.S. support for Israel's genocide in Gaza. Israeli forces have carried out fresh raids across the occupied West Bank cities, abducting several Palestinians. Earlier, our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Candil, updated us on Israeli raids that are taking place almost on a daily basis.
The Israelis are arresting people from all walks of life, including women and children, and even Palestinian former prisoners who had been recently released in the latest swap deal that was accepted between the resistance groups and Israel. And at the same time, the Israelis are detaining former prisoners. This morning, the Israelis raided Tulkarem. They raided also Bitonia, Al-Khalil, the village of Kufr Ain near Ramallah, Qalqilia, Tulkarem, and Bethlehem. According to the recent statistics from the Palestinian Prisoners Commission, 15 Palestinians had been detained this morning, and the number could be even more than 15. And this means the number of Palestinians who have been detained since the 7th of October is today over 7,430 Palestinians. The Israelis continue to claim that the main aim of the non-stop Israeli operations across the occupied West Bank is in order to prevent people from being engaged in any form of resistance, even if these are peaceful demonstrations, different forms of activity.
The Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah says it has precisely targeted a building in the Israeli settlement of Avivim with appropriate weapons, inflicting significant damage to it. Earlier, our correspondent Mariam Saleh in Beirut gave us an update on Hezbollah's retaliatory attacks.
Hezbollah has also released some numbers, actually, and we're talking about 150 days since the beginning of the war. They say there's at least 2,000 Israeli soldiers either killed or wounded as a result of the continuous operations by Hezbollah. There's also huge numbers of rockets that were fired. They talk about those numbers. We're talking about here at least 5 kilometers from the border in the Galilee that have been completely evacuated. You have also Hezbollah's rocket fire reaching more than 23 kilometers within those settlements and that area. You have 43 settlements that were evacuated and at least 230,000 settlers of Israelis have been evacuated and have been displaced from that area since the beginning of the confrontations. You have also Hezbollah has mentioned that they have targeted and perhaps destroyed some 68 vehicles, 38 command centers, and 283 fortifications. And of course, they're in addition to the espionage devices that they have also destroyed, the technological hardware for the Israelis. We're talking about some 300 in addition to 570 residents or settlements that are built in those settlements areas that were destroyed by Hezbollah. So you have very significant numbers for that were issued by Hezbollah. Of course, Hezbollah has said 2,000 Israeli soldiers have been killed or wounded, since they cannot really verify how many were killed. But they have also said that any number that is given by the Israeli army is inaccurate, and it is usually much more than what it is.
To the United States, where it's a joyous occasion for former President Donald Trump, who has increased his lead further on Super Tuesday. This is a day when the outcome of Democratic and Republican primaries in 15 states and one territory typically shapes the race for the White House. Addressing his supporters in Florida, Trump hailed his wins as unprecedented.
Thank you very much. They call it Super Tuesday for a reason. This is a big one. And they tell me, the pundits and otherwise, that there's never been one like this. There's never been anything so conclusive. This was an amazing night, an amazing day. It's been an incredible period of time in our country's history. It's been sad in so many ways, but I think it's going to be inspiring, because we're going to do something that, frankly, nobody's been able to do for a long time.
Trump's sole Republican challenger, Nikki Haley, is far behind, as she has won only in Vermont. Trump has won at least 890 delegates to date, while Haley has secured fewer than 70. That despite the former president facing a number of lawsuits in the Democratic camp. Incumbent President Joe Biden is cruising toward nomination as he swept in all 15 states on Super Tuesday. Biden remains a frontrunner for Democrats. As he faces no real challenger within the party, he gears up for a likely rematch with Trump in November. Meanwhile, Biden said in a statement that a second Trump term would be a return to, quote, chaos, division, and darkness. Earlier, we spoke to Gloria LaRiva, activist and political analyst from San Francisco. She told us that most Americans are shocked to see Trump and Biden competing for the presidency again, despite doing nothing while at the White House.
The sentiment among many people is one of disgust and basically shock that it could be the same two candidates who have had proven records of doing nothing to help the people of the United States, and instead carrying out wars on Biden's part, the war in Ukraine, funding by hundreds of billions of dollars, and then financing, tripling the amount of aid, military aid, to the genocide that Israel is carrying out. And Biden buying time for Israel in its attack on the Palestinian people. But on the other hand, let's remember that in 2020, September, was the Abraham Accords, which Trump was behind, in which it was normalizing the relationship of Israel with several Arab countries, including UAE, Bahrain, Morocco, and eventually Saudi Arabia. That was only stopped recently, or paralyzed for a time, by the resistance that began with the Al-Aqsa flood of October 7. But the choice is really very, very dire. And that's why, actually, there are several third-party candidates who have arisen who are getting quite interest in the U.S. public. Of course, they will not get the kind of publicity on national television that Trump and Biden will get.
In the UK, government ministers are considering expanding the definition of extremism and banning members of parliament from engaging with protest groups, among them pro-Palestine march organizers. Human rights campaigners say the move is an insult to democracy, Said Puduzo reports.
The right to speak out, to protest, the very fabric of democratic rights, once again under attack in the UK, as the government updates its definition of extremism and is about to introduce a potential ban on parliamentarians joining protests. Recommendations from the government's advisor on political violence, John Woodcock, also known as Lord Walney, who is a former chair of Labour Friends of Israel, call on leaders of the mainstream political parties to instruct their MPs to employ a zero-tolerance approach to groups that use disruptive tactics or fail to stop, quote, hate on marches. In the crosshairs, climate activist groups such as Extinction Rebellion and Palestine Solidarity Campaign, who have organized the enormous peaceful mobilizations for Gaza since October last year.
And this is an affront to democracy and an indication of a weak and decaying government's descent into authoritarianism. It's totally out of touch with the British people and actually very much out of keeping with the British values that they claim to champion.
Ahead of Walney's recommendations, and after the by-election in Rochdale, Greater Manchester, that handed pro-Palestine campaigner George Galloway a thumping victory, a speech by the Prime Minister vilifying the pro-Palestinian protests demanding a ceasefire in Gaza.
In recent weeks and months, we have seen a shocking increase in extremist disruption and criminality. What started as protests on our streets has descended into intimidation, threats, and planned acts of violence.
Critics say comments like those about peaceful demonstrations are a threat to the long tradition of freedom of protest and expression in the country.
His assertions are totally false. I mean, you know, the claims of an increase in anti-Semitism, of extremism, there is no evidence for that. I mean, this is just pure invention and another indication, frankly, of how weak this government really is. To have a special address to the nation as if there was some sort of state of emergency. And some people that spoke to me thought that we'd declared war on Russia. What it was George Galloway, the leader of the Workers' Party, getting elected as a member of parliament. I mean, that should be celebrated, not attacked in that way. It's just absolutely ridiculous.
The new changes are yet to be announced and legislated, but the political temperature is rapidly rising in the UK.
In its 2024 World Report, Human Rights Watch says that the UK government's practices and policies have severely curtailed domestic human rights protections. Others say the country is at risk of turning into a police state masquerading as a democracy. The question now is, how deep will those erosions go? And will the MPs in the building behind me allow them to continue? Saidpur is up, London.
Well, that's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Yani.
Bazaar.
Wherever you go, you are surrounded by real estate, whether they are houses, offices, shops, hotels, or education, or even healthcare facilities. These buildings are all the products of Realty Development. Property is a multi-business. It can involve buying land and building on it, renovating or improving, or converting property from one use to another. All of which adds higher value to the area. Property developers quite literally build the world around us, creating and changing the environments we inhabit and use on our daily basis.
Hello again and welcome to another edition of Bazaar, the weekly program that analyzes markets,
nonprofits, industries, and all sorts of things that connect us nationally and internationally. This week, we will take a look at Iran's housing and light construction industry. We want to uncover how this market is doing and what contributions it is making to living standards along with the economy. Time to light up today's Bazaar.
In order to become more familiar with the activities of light construction in Iran, we decided to visit a real estate developer in the capital city, Tehran. Nexa Group was established over a decade ago and is a known name in the construction industry. Essentially, it develops luxury properties for residential purposes. In a nutshell, a developer adds value to land or property. What sets this company apart from other developers is its choice of cream-of-the-crop architects who are highly creative, innovative, and experienced in the field of design. Clients who have land they wish to develop can seek the services of this contractor. This company then enters a contract with the owner and begins the process of vetting architects for designing its buildings. In recent years, several competitions have been held by this developer for residential projects. The winning design that meets the high standards of this company and its clients is awarded the project. But that's not all. This company also has a vast network of highly specialized subcontractors to take care of other aspects of construction, such as structure engineering, excavators, and so on. Among its many activities, this developer provides building management services. Such services include maintenance of plumbing, electrical, and mechanical installations of the building.
There are several different types of property development. Some are large-scale, meaning that several lots of land are being developed into a single plot. These types of developments can be subdivided and sold individually or as a whole. There are also developments for commercial and sports uses, such as shopping centers and stadiums. Ooh, I like the sound of this.
Projects at this company range from low to medium density residential buildings. This developer also pays particular attention to designing buildings that are environmentally friendly. Most of its buildings are constructed following green practices that also elevate the living standards and quality of experience of its end users. One of its most recent residential projects is called Phoenix. What is most unique about this building is that it was designed based on the traditional 9-square method of Iranian architecture. This green building incorporates the needs of people during the coronavirus pandemic, which includes spaces for working from home. Large investments are made in real estate development each day. But adding value to the property, such as luxury structures with numerous amenities, are what really drive profits. And this company is ready to work with foreign investors and export its services along these lines. One of the competitive advantages of this developer, relative to others in the country, are its innovative and exceptional designs that gain the attention of clients and customers. Its luxury developments are geared to entice customers with more accommodations, higher-end options that integrate an entire lifestyle, and an elevated culture of living. The quality of its work has increased competition in the domestic market, making its buildings a must-have among customers. This property developer also has a unique view of the US-imposed sanctions, which has helped the company thrive throughout the years.
Iran has a growing population of around 85 million people, and the majority of the population is still young. But as time goes by, this population will age as they start families. With this in mind, many of them are embarking on the journey of purchasing homes. And for this to become possible, more housing units need to be constructed to meet this growing need.
The Ministry of Roads and Urban Development estimates that the per capita of housing for each Iranian is around 200 square meters. This means that 17 billion square meters of buildable land is needed to house every Iranian. According to the Ministry of Roads and Urban Development, the annual demand for homes stands at 900,000 units. In more general terms, according to the Ministry of Housing, some 10 million units are currently needed. This is while the average annual production volume for homes is around 300,000 units. So around 1 million residential units need to be built each year to satisfy this demand. Figures from the Statistics Center of Iran show construction of housing increased by nearly 40% last year. Data from the Ministry of Roads and Urban Development show municipalities issue an average of 350,000 residential construction permits each year. Of this amount, roughly 70% lead to construction. However, experts say this is not nearly enough to meet annual housing demands. Last year, the housing construction market saw a slump in completing projects. This was mainly due to the jump in land prices and construction materials that deepened the housing recession. The Ministry of Roads and Urban Development says housing prices have increased by 200% over the last 5 years. This has increased the purchase parity, making some vulnerable groups unable to buy a home.
It might be interesting to know that this issue has gathered the attention of the government for some time now. The government has implemented initiatives to help people purchase homes. One of these initiatives was to increase the amount of bank loans for first home buyers. Several other plans are also underway, such as the vacant house tax plan, to increase the amount of available homes.
President Ibrahim Raisi has pledged to build 1 million residential units each year for the next 4 years. This scheme was presented to address and prevent a housing shortage in the country. The Building Contractors Association says planning, execution, and building material is available. It emphasized that with large investments and land allocation, this plan can easily go forward. But authorities contend that infrastructure such as electricity and water connectivity requires more planning. Government officials also say wrinkles in the financial model for this project still need to be ironed out. Iran is entirely self-sufficient when it comes to construction material, according to the Ministry of Industry, Mining and Trade. Steel, glass, and cement is produced in abundance in the country. In fact, the surplus of these items are exported to several countries around the world. Meanwhile, the light construction industry in Iran is booming amid a long housing recession. New spaces and innovative designs that incorporate the needs of people are being built. Homes are not just a place to live, they are increasingly being seen as a source of capital and a place to increase the quality of living standards. There is also a growing trend towards designing sustainable buildings that reduce emissions and negative environmental impacts. All these achievements make this industry a promising one with a bright future. It is said nearly 70% of the world's protein comes from animal sources. While the plant-based trend is popular for the time being, meat is here to stay. Protein is also a brain food, vital for neurological and other bodily functions. Moreover, globally, the relationship between humans and livestock is fascinating. It has transcended time and space. Yet, despite all the world's technological and scientific accomplishments, mankind has failed to replicate livestock's exact contributions to food, clothing, and even energy. Last time, we visited Khazai Agricultural and Livestock Breeding Complex and explored their agricultural and cultivation units. This time, we will look at their advanced animal husbandry divisions and what led them to livestock rearing. To begin with, it all starts from the soil. Over time, the ground needs constant enrichment for high-yield harvests. After this company shifted to knowledge-based potato cultivation, it realized the best way to prepare the farmlands for the next round of planting was to employ the help of sheep. This company has around 2,400 hectares of farmland, and fertilizing this much land becomes a mammoth task. So, it decided to bring in the heavyweights of the fertilizing sector and started its cattle breeding unit.
and as a result, it also launched its animal feed production facility, where they scientifically formulate feed and test ingredients for the best quality. As the cows are allowed to roam the lands periodically and are fed high-quality food, the dairy and meat they produce are also very nutritious. They have thousands of Holstein cattle at their rearing unit, and the milk produced is rigorously tested.
Typically, livestock is fitted with digital tags. This is the animal's profile, which can be modified or added according to the animal's examination. They also serve as an identity card so caretakers can keep track of each animal's health and other features. This is also important information for veterinarians and the animal's products, which are further examined in advanced labs.
Each animal born or brought to the facility is given a digital tag after a lab examination. This company's advanced veterinary and genetic lab complex carries out essential functions. It's worth mentioning that one of its labs is mainly dedicated to testing cows and their milk. Here, milk is tested for its microbial load. This usually involves a standard plate count, which determines the total number of bacteria in a sample. These results are then used to determine the grade of milk. It might be interesting to know that this company has received numerous awards for being the best model cattle breeder in the province and the country. These titles were granted based on meeting nearly 40 standards of the Ministry of Agriculture. Such achievements were made possible by dozens of expert staff employed at this company. Its other laboratory is dedicated to raising sheep. At this facility, sheep are genetically selected for specific characteristics. They are also genetically bred to produce twins and sometimes triplets. This company has never stopped eyeing the future. It plans to expand its facilities further while incorporating new technology and applying the latest science to increase the quality of its products.
...2019 was considered the golden period for red meat production in the country. Since then, production has grown each year, primarily because of the removal of an export ban. 3 years ago, Iran imported large amounts of meat to supply domestic needs, while domestic meat production was operating at full capacity. The ban was implemented to stabilize the market and support local production.
Iran's Livestock Exporters National Assembly estimates domestic needs for red meat at around 60 million heads of light livestock annually. Last year, this number was 72 million, which is well above average. This meant 12 million light livestock were ready for culling and exports. The Ministry of Agriculture puts red meat's domestic per capita consumption at over 12 kilograms, with lamb being the most popular red meat. This year, the National Statistical Center, or SCI, reported red meat production stood at nearly 51,000 tons in the month of May alone. Based on the SCI figures, over 1.3 million livestock holding farms are spread across the country. 54% of these farm small livestock and 26% are dedicated to large livestock husbandry. The remaining 20% farms both large and small livestock. The meat industry in Iran is worth some $2 billion. But not all livestock are raised for meat. They are also reared for their milk. Based on the SCI, Iran annually produces nearly 9 million tons of raw milk. 70% of this amount is produced on industrial farms, and the rest comes from traditional dairy farms. Going off of figures from Iran's Customs Administration, on average, roughly 800,000 tons of raw milk are exported annually, valued at around $800 million. All things considered, Iran's livestock industry is booming and is an excellent place for investors who will see quick returns and profit.
Now it's that time of the show for me to step aside for several minutes because my good friend and colleague has another awesome field report lined up for you. Take it away.
The basis of the steel industry is iron ore. It's courtesy of this critical raw material that steel is all around us. In the beneficiation process, the ganque minerals, or the mineral matter of no value that occurs with the metallic ore, is removed from the mineral substance and iron ore concentrate is produced. The concentrate is then shipped from mining plants as a bulk commodity by rail.
Hi again, the wagons carrying the iron ore concentrate have reached their destination. What happens at this stage is that through a gargantuan machine, they are overturned. This is called a wagon tippler. What it does is that it tips the wagons. It retains the wagons from the top and it overturns them. First, the wagons are detached from other wagons and then they're lifted over here. And look at those arms. Look at those arms, how gigantic they are. And now they're going to retain the wagon, overturn it to empty its load into a container. From that container, the iron ore concentrate is going to be mixed. First, it's going to travel through some distance and it's going to be mixed with some additives to be fed into the pelletizing process.
In this week's feature program, we visited Chotormadu Industrial Facility located in the center of Iran, Yazd province. The iron ore concentrate must be pelletized for use in iron and steel making. In summary, pelletizing is achieved by combining the iron ore with water and a specific binder, which is then rolled up in a balling drum to produce relatively uniform pellets, which can then be easily handled in downstream processes.
And here we are. The powder is the iron ore concentrate now mixed with some additive. It is now fed into large discs. In this industrial complex, everything is just enormous. This is called the pelleting disc. It's really huge. Now what happens here is through the use of centrifugal force, the powder gets compressed and it's just pushed to the edges of this disc. And after the powder completes a couple rotation and as it grows in size, then it forms the pellets. And once it is just large enough, it will exit the rotation because of that centrifugal force and it moves over to the conveyor belt and it's now time for grading. Now, those particles that are just perfect in size and shape, they will move on to travel over to the kiln where the content moisture is removed and sintering takes place. So the iron pellet now gets hardened and after that, cooling takes place. Now, stay with us for more.
Chotormalu's pelletizing plant, with a production capacity of 3.4 million tons per year, employs 500 people directly and another 3,000 indirectly. The iron ore pellets will be transferred to stackers and are piled in an area which can store 300,000 tons of pellets.
Fe2O3, I don't know how familiar you are with chemistry and the chemical reactions and the periodic table, but anyway, at this stage of the process, Fe2O3 is going to be turned into Fe through a process that is called direct reduction of iron. And this process is done by three main stages. The first stage occurs above furnace. The pellets are poured into the furnace. And what happens inside the furnace is two gases are going to hit the pellets. The gases are carbon monoxide and molecular hydrogen. They're extracted from natural gas through a process that is called reformation. And two gases are going to hit the pellets, and through three chemical reactions, Fe2O3 is going to turn into Fe, which is called the reduced iron, or also sponge iron because of its high porosity. Now, this process can be done in two different ways. One is called hot direct reduction of iron, and the other one is called cold direct reduction of iron. Now, I'm going to move on to the next and the final stage, steel production.
Hot direct reduced iron, or HDRI, is DRI that is transported hot directly from the reduction furnace into an electric arc furnace, thereby saving energy. Whereas cold DRI is the one that is cooled and stored before being charged to a furnace. Well, on the face of it, there's no reason for facilities to even consider cold DRI. But in reality, it's not really that simple. The development of mankind would have been impossible but for steel. It fueled the Industrial Revolution and remains the backbone of modern industrialized economies. The process continues with primary steelmaking, which is done via electric arc furnace at Chodormalu, and then moves on to secondary steelmaking, which involves treating, continuous casting, and shaping.
The final product is made, the steel billet, and you can tell how hot it is in here. Well, the process here starts with the electric arc furnace. It melts the sponge iron that I talked about earlier. And what happens next is that we need some ladles. Ladles are containers. They're going to contain the molten material. Then the ladles are taken over some molds. Molds are going to carry the molten material. And as the molten material is carried over some distance, it solidifies into the final product, which is this steel billet. Now, this complex is really huge. Everything inside it is gigantic. And I've been with you from the very beginning of this process, the iron concentrate, to the very end.
Thanks for that educational adventure once again. Well, that covers our show for today. I have been Samson Sees. Sees you in the next bazaar.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us. The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Brothers, sisters, listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And welcome to the program Keys of Life, Mafatihul Hayat. We are talking about our duty towards our brothers and sisters, especially when it comes to financial, tangible aid. So we mentioned the rewards, we mentioned even the punishment for the person who does not help and support his brothers and sisters in faith. The Ahlul Bayt alayhim wassalam, even when it comes to feeding and crunching the thirst of the mu'mineen, they told us what to do. Now, a hadith from the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wasallam, he says, "Man saqa mu'minan sharbatan min al-ma." Whoever crunch the thirst of a believer with one sip of water. Not a lot, just sharbatan min al-ma, just a small sip. Haythu yaqdur, whenever he can. الماء أعطاه الله بكل شربة سبعين ألف حسنة. Allah would give him for each sip of water 70,000 deeds. وإن سقاه من حيث لا يقدر. This is when a person has the water and he can crunch his thirst. Sometimes you don't have, like you have little water to you, to yourself, and you know, but you still give it to your other brother. He says when he gives him من حيث لا يقدر. فَكَأَنَّمَا أَعْتَقَ عَشَرَةِ لِقَابٍ مِّنْ وَلْدِ إِسْمَعِيلِ. It's as if he has freed 10 slaves, or 10 necks, I should say, 10 servants from the kids of Ismail alayhi salam, which is, you know, the asbat, the prophets, and that comes from the lineage. The Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam, also in this regard, he says, مَنْ سَقَى مُؤْمِنًا مِّنْ ضَمَئٍ. When a person crunches the thirst of another person while being thirsty, سَقَاهُ اللَّهُ مِنَ الرَّحِيقُ الْمَخْتُومِ. Allah will crunch his thirst from the pure sealed wine. Now, what is this pure sealed wine? We have no idea. Obviously, it is not the same wine of this world. It's the wine of the Akhirah. Inshallah, we will go there and we will see for ourselves and taste it. But the condition is, we need to crunch the thirst of the mu'mineen as well. So this one comes to even crunching the thirst. When it comes to clothing them, giving them clothes, the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam, they also told us what to do. A hadith from the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wasalam, he says, whoever gives a believing Muslim, not a mu'min, Muslim, the lowest form of Islam, just to say, I believe there is no God but Allah and the Prophet is his messenger. Any Muslim, when you give them clothes to so they can cover their body from nakedness and or help them in anything in this regard, in any form that helps them support his life, Allah will designate 70,000 angels to this person who helped this Muslim. What do these angels do? The Prophet says, these 70,000 people will do istighfar for you, seeking forgiveness for you, until the malak blows in the trumpet and the day of Qiyamah. So basically, until the day of Qiyamah, these 70,000 angels are praying for you. Let us take a short break, and then we will come back.
Ayatollah Javadi Amali, the author of the book Mafatih ul Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatih ul Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree. Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam, who has stressed out the reward for praying, has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and we are talking about helping our following brothers and sisters financially. Among the help that we have to use financial aid or money in this regard is giving clothes, which means I have to buy clothes and give it to them. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, he says in a hadith, من كسى مؤمنا ثوبا من عري, whoever clothes and give clothes to a Muslim, a mu'min, a believer from nakedness, كَسَاهُ اللَّهُ مِنْ إِسْتَبْرَقَ الْجَنَّةِ, Allah will give him from the garments of heaven. If a person gives a garment or clothes to a believing mu'min while he's in the state of, you know, being very well off himself, he says he remains under the protection and the veil of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala as long as there is a small fabric of that clothes remain, because sometimes clothes, you know, they will get worn out and they finish. But sometimes the Imam says even a piece of that clothes, as long as it's still remaining alive or still exists, he says that Allah will keep you under his veil, protect you under his veil, and keep you safe again. Imam Zain al-Abidin alayhi salam, he says in a hadith, he says in terms of giving clothes to a believing mu'min, when a person has a piece of cloth that he does not need himself, whether it's a shirt, pants, you know, whatever clothes that you have that you don't wear anymore, you don't need them. And he says, you do not give it to a person that you know might use them. He says, if that happens, then Allah will send this person who has clothes that he does not need but does not give, he will send him to hell head first. So he will be thrown on his face to hell. And which obviously puts the pressure on me and you that, surely, me and you, we have plenty of clothes that we don't need, we don't use, and they are also in a really, really good condition. Some of these clothes we wear maybe a few times and we never wear them again, and we keep buying. These clothes we can wash and iron and we can fix, and we give it to these organizations that give them to the people who are in need. So why should you keep so much clothes in your closet that you don't wear? What the Imam says, on Day of Judgment, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will question you, and one of the punishment is that Allah will throw me face first in hell. Also, when it comes to knowing there's a Muslim who needs a place to stay, but I don't offer him anything. One, obviously I can. The hadith from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, he says, مَنْ كَانَ لَهُ دَارٌ, whoever had a house, وَاحْتَاجَ مُؤْمِنٍ إِلَىٰ أَنْ يَسْكُنَهَا, and a believing person wanted to live in this house. فَمَنَعَهُ إِيَّهُ, but he refused. So he has an extra house that he does not use. And a person asked him, look, is it okay that I can stay in your house for a while until my condition changes? And the person says to him, no, sorry, I can't let you live in my house, because if you go to my house, you will destroy the walls and you will do this and that, blah, blah, blah. Meaning that he rejects him. قال الله عز وجل, Allah in return will say, ملائكتي, my angels, عبدي بخل على عبدي, my servant became stingy on my other servant. بسكن الدار, when it comes to making him live in this house, وعزتي لا يسكن جناني أبدا, by my power and my might, this person will not be a dweller of my heaven, which means obviously this person is going to go to hell. So I have a place. I can give it to others, but I decide not to. Allah says, you don't give it to them, well, I'm not going to give you heaven either. Fair deal. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Driving past, walking fast, to the field of dreams, hear the children's screams.
The Was the Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind.
A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.